Welcome everyone to this episode of Speaking of Translation. I'm Eve Baudou.
And I'm Corinne McKay. Thanks for joining us.
So in this episode, we're going to be talking about a topic that is not specific to translators, but that is of interest to very many people in the language professions. And that topic is raising children bilingually. So we are excited to have a special guest with us today, Jennifer Bacall-Horn. And Jennifer lives in Colorado too, but a few hours from where Corinne and I live. She lives in beautiful Breckenridge, Colorado, up in the mountains. And Corinne and I live in the Denver Boulder area. So Jennifer is also a French and English translator, and she's also an interpreter. And her website is translationsbyjen.com. So Jen, thanks so much for joining us. And it'd be great if you could introduce yourself a little bit to our listeners and tell us about your language background.
Absolutely. And thanks so much for having me. Super excited to be here with you guys and to talk about this fascinating topic that's a lot of fun. So as far as my language background, I was born in New York to Hungarian parents, actually. So Hungarian is technically my mother tongue. And then I moved to France when I was about 11 years old, moved back to the States when I was 23. So I was in France for 12 years altogether. And now we have we have two daughters. I have a one-year-old and a three-year-old, and I kind of always knew that I wanted to pass on a language to my children, but I was kind of not sure which one to choose or if I could do both, but after reading a little bit while I was pregnant about one parent, one language strategy, I realized I wouldn't be able to do both languages for sure. That would be a little bit much. Some people, I'm sure, could do it, but for me, it wasn't really, it didn't seem feasible. So we kind of decided to go with French, just thinking maybe it would present more opportunities for them in the future. And that's kind of the background, I guess, of the languages for us.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And Eve, even though our listeners, of course, already know you, I wondered if you might want to talk a little bit about your background in terms of this topic specifically.
Sure, yeah. So as people probably know, I'm a native speaker of English, but I ended up marrying a French guy. And so, and I had lived in France when I was a junior in college. Then I went back for graduate school. And then I met my husband. And then we were together, you know, a while before we had our own kids. But we really wanted, like Jen said too, we really wanted to raise our boys. What we ended up having was two boys, which some of you have heard probably before. We were really interested in raising them as bilingual English-French speakers. It was really important to us because my husband still has a lot of family in France and the grandparents, and we really wanted the kids to be able to have relationships with them. So, and I speak French too, obviously, and don't just read it and write it, but speak it too. So, you know, we kind of were decided to do that together. Yeah. And so my husband started talking to the kids right when they were born in French. And then my relationship, the bilingual relationship with them is a little more complicated, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. But, you know, that's basically our background.
Great. So first I wanted to start with a question for both of you. And I should say, I'm going to act mostly as the host for this episode, because I have relatively little to say on this topic, because although I do have a daughter who's now 15 and does great in Spanish, she energetically resisted every attempt I ever made to speak French with her when she was little. So for today, I'm just going to be the host, and you guys are going to be the experts. So Jennifer, let's start with you, and I wondered if you could talk a little bit about how you decided to raise your kids bilingually, and for example, did you speak French with them from the get-go, from the day they were born, and do you only speak French with them, or do you mix English in, or was it something that you sort of worked up to over time?
So that's a great question. Going into this, I absolutely wanted to speak 100% French with them. That was my goal. But I'll be honest, I have not always been sticking with it. It's hard. It's hard, especially since I'm the only one speaking to them in French. It's hard because they speak back to me. My three-year-old, she speaks back to me in English. To me, it is a work in progress, but yes, I would like to speak 100% of the time French to them. And I did try to speak French to them 100% of the time from birth. So I did, you know, listen to a lot of French nursery songs, and we still do, and French radio, to just kind of have that in the atmosphere, almost as a reminder for myself, too. So not just for them, but, you know, for me as well. But, you know, the thing for me also at this point is that I do, at this point in my life, I do speak, think more in English. So that's kind of what comes out automatically. Especially in moments if I'm tired or a little bit sleep deprived, then it takes a more concerted effort to switch into French, which, you know, isn't always what you want to do when you're tired. You just want to communicate and not have to think about it. So it's a constant effort. I honestly don't really care about what other people think if I'm out in public. So to me, that's not really an issue.
That's a good point, right.
I feel like you. Like, some people say that they've asked me that over the years, or I've read other people, but I guess that's our personalities, Jan, because I'm like, why is that their concern? I've never been concerned about that. Yeah.
Well, if anything, for me, it's actually, like, sparked some cool conversations. And then people generally ask questions, like, oh, what language is this, and how do you speak French? So, if anything, I've maybe made some friends out of, you know, having people ask me questions. So that's really not my issue. My issue is kind of my own brain settings, if you will. And then another interesting thing is that, like, for me, the baby language didn't come easily because I was 11 years old when I moved to Paris and 23 when I came back, as I mentioned earlier. So I kind of missed the baby, like, vocab and, like, the language-related things. So I sometimes occasionally do have to look things up at the end of the day and be like, huh, I wanted to tell my child to, you know, grab the rattle, but I didn't know how to use what word that was in French. So little things like that were kind of makes it definitely a work in progress for me, at least. So I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, that was perfect. So Eve, why don't you tell us, and Jen, just to clarify, does your husband or partner speak French? Does the girl's dad speak French at all?
So he understands most of what I say. He does speak some Portuguese because he spent a year in Brazil. So he's, you know, he's aware of languages kind of in general, but no, he doesn't actively speak French. I'm pretty much on my own on that. But he understands everything for sure. So that makes it easier too, because at least I know that what I'm saying to my daughter, he will probably understand it. I mean, my oldest daughter's 3, so the conversations are really not quite philosophical quite yet.
Right. Well, and I think, you know, one thing just for inspiration for listeners is I think in the course of the podcast, you and I can also tell stories about other translators we know here in Colorado, and that I think one thing for people to absorb is it is really possible to raise your kids bilingually in any kind of situation like that. Like, for example, even I know a German to English translator who lives here. She's a native English speaker. Her husband doesn't speak German, and other German translators who are native German speakers have told me, like, her kids' German is incredible. Her kids' German is really, really good.
It's really good. I had her talk about her in my notes too. Kathy DiCenzo, it's really impressive. So
Anyway. Yeah. So I think that's one thing, you know, for inspiration for our listeners is that I think a lot of people think, you know, I can't do this if I'm not a native speaker. I can't do this if the other parent doesn't speak the non-English language. And I think the point is, like, if you're motivated, you totally can.
So, oh, absolutely. Yeah. It is a mindset for sure. 100%.
Yeah. So, Eve, why don't you tell us a little bit about your progression through this linguistic journey?
Yeah, so what I, as I mentioned, both my husband and I are native speakers, and he's a native, I mean, sorry, not native speakers, they're both French speakers, but he is the native speaker. But I have felt in our journey that I, like, if it weren't for me and the kids wouldn't speak French, and it's not necessarily for the language piece, it's for the enthusiasm piece, and I was the one, you know, when they were little and I was working part-time and that kind of thing, like, I was really gung-ho on getting all the resources and following through, where he was too busy, you know, being the being the full-time guy or whatever. So I feel like we were
more than you did when they were little, and you probably spent more time with them when they were little.
I had time to focus on, okay, I'm going to look and research buying all these books or whatever. So I think it was a joint, you know, kind of a joint thing. But you asked about, like, did we do it when they first came out? So my husband it was really important to me because his English is very good, as Corinne knows. She knows him personally, and I think Jen's met him. But he, I just felt like it would be perfectly – he could have fallen into that where he would have easily just spoken English to them because we were in an English environment. And so I remember like kind of, you know, nagging him before the first child was born, saying, the second he comes out of the room, the second he comes out, you have to speak French to him, because I felt like it would be too easy to slip into English because his English is so good. And so he has always done that, and he is really our rock with the consistency. And so for me, what we decided at first, because we'd read some theories, you know, some methods or whatever, that they call one parent, one language, which a lot of people are really into, where each parent speaks their native language. And then, so we were going to do that. And then like 2 weeks in, we have this 2-week-old baby. And I just thought, it's not going to work for us. You know, in our particular situation, there's just too much English everywhere. We just can't do it, because if we do, I'm with him all the time. He's really not going to speak French. And so at 2 weeks old, I switched. And so then until he was about 3, I spoke French to my older child all the time, and that was the same with my second child too, who's now 12. And so both of them, kind of like Jen said, I think, was that my kid's native language really was, you know, first language was French until they were like 3. And so, and the reasons, like what you guys were saying, I think that, you know, you have to do what works for your family. Like, you know, read all this stuff or listen to everybody's ideas, but then you have to work what you have to do what works for you, because nobody's solution is the same as somebody else's, and you can't feel like. But like, if you read, at least when I used to read about the one parent, one language, people are like super, super into that, and I felt like, well, okay, that's not working for me. Sorry, for various reasons or whatever. So whatever, everybody has their own path, and so. And I did want to say, because my kids are a little bit older than Jen's at this point, just different things that kind of came up with my own family, who doesn't speak French at all. I'm originally from Anchorage, Alaska, as the listeners have probably heard before, and everybody speaks English, and they thought it was really funny, and they still talk about that, like, oh, it was so funny when Luca was 2 and he couldn't understand what we were saying. Ah, ha, ha, ha. Because, you know, even though he was a 2-year-old, I remember dropping him off first when he first started going to preschool, you know, and then it was like an afterthought for me, and I was like, oh, by the way, he doesn't speak English, bye!
You know, speak English, right.
I was like, he doesn't understand when you say potty, that's why, see ya! Yeah, but anyway, it all worked out. So, and then another thing that I think is kind of funny is that I remember when my older son was, I don't know, 7 or 8, and he comes home and he's like, hey, Mom, you know, so-and-so, my friend, has TV. And I'm like, well, we have TV. And he goes, no, Mom, I mean, he has real TV, like with English and stuff. So that for years I was able to, like, you know, trick them into thinking that all the DVDs and all the the friendship we had, that's what TV was. Right. The TV was really just the playing box. It wasn't like broadcast TV didn't exist.
Yeah. That's really funny. We're the same way. We're only allowed to watch cartoons or TV shows in French. So yeah, we have the same rules in this household.
I think that kind of also people say, like, you know, I mean, I'm not a particularly personally a TV person really, but I always felt like I have guilt, because, you know, if they want to watch TV and it's in French, more power to them, as long as it's in French.
Oh yeah, you know, I feel the same way
about that. Yeah, because it was you know, an input for them or whatever. So then like Jen said too, you know, till my kids are about 10, we really had a vast majority of our books were in French. You know, like you said, I taught them French nursery rhymes. I didn't teach them English ones for the most part. I taught them French songs, you know, French kid songs. We got them all their movies in French on DVD, whatever. We read to them in French, all that kind of stuff. And so once in a while I felt kind of like, oh, this is different than my childhood. I kind of felt a little bit of a loss, you know, but it was more important to me to get the French going. And then we really felt like we need to help them with the French and the French cultural touchstones and French language, because we live in the U.S. and they'll get the English language and the cultural side here because it's really everywhere. And I feel like now that they're older, I feel that for us, that was the right move. And I really don't feel like, oh my God, they have this weird cultural gap in English. I don't feel that way, you know, in American culture. I think that it's so ubiquitous anyway that they got it anyway. So, but you know, during it, when they were maybe 5 or 6 and I wasn't reading them the nursery rhymes of my own youth, and I might have had the crisis of just kind of, you know, a little bit of sadness. It didn't, in the end, it didn't matter. So,
go ahead.
I was going to say, and then when they were, some people might have heard this before too, when they were 7 and 10, We lived in France for 6 months and put him in school, and we often go to France, and we send them to France, and we have taken different classes. Like, we never enrolled our kids. There is a local French school in Colorado, in the Denver area, but it was too far from us, so we did not actually enroll our kids in the bilingual school. But we did a lot of home stuff or private lessons of trying to also get their some of their writing skills up. So,
great. And Eve, before I go on to the next question, was there anything you wanted to ask Jen? You don't have to, but you could.
I guess. Let's see. I'm trying to think what people would be interested in, because I know that she's really motivated, and she's really good. Maybe she'll tell us about that too. She's really good at finding cool resources, and she's a little better than me about that, because I always thought. But she seems kind of, you know, good about. I don't know. She can talk about that. So,
okay, anyway. We have a resources question at the end. So I'll go to my next question for you. So one thing I wondered, and this might be, so Eve, I'd like you to answer this from the perspective of your kids, and Jen, maybe from the perspective of other adults in your life, whether you've ever faced any resistance in terms of the idea of raising your kid bilingually. And for you, Eve, I wondered if you could say, have the kids gotten more or less receptive over time? Because I recently had this interesting example that one of my husband's friends from college, the dad in the family, is Norwegian. And his English, of course, like every Norwegian, is perfect. Mm-hmm. But he speaks mostly Norwegian with the kids. So the interesting, as a language person, I found this fascinating, that he said when the kids were little, they were totally receptive to Norwegian because they didn't know anything different. Then they kind of went through a slump in like late elementary and middle school, but that then when they were a little older, they got enthusiastic about it again because they realized that they could talk to each other or to him without anyone else understanding. So then it was like their cool secret code, like they could talk about their teachers in front of the teachers. And the teachers had no idea because they would say it in Norwegian. That, you know, dad said, like, yeah, every time they call me and their friends are around, they just speak Norwegian so that nobody understands what they're saying. So, mm-hmm. Eve, why don't you tell us about, for your kids, and Jen, I know for you it's going to be a little different, but Jen, maybe you can tell us, like, what was the reaction of, like, your close friends, grandparents, you know, people like that when you decided to do this? So, Eve, can you tell us a little bit from the kid perspective, what do you feel like they're receptiveness has been over time?
Mm-hmm. I do want to just throw in for me, and I'll let Jen address it mostly, but just for me, I never really had a lot of resistance from people. And then I tend to think, and I do hear people talk about that other people have encountered resistance from others. And I think, like, maybe that's a bad reflection on me, and that I'm so strict with other people that they're afraid to tell me that. But I never really got bad feedback from others outside my family. So anyway, I have, you know, on all the literature that I've been reading over the years, and I've heard other people say that their kids have had resistance, but for whatever reason, I have a theory about why that is, but we've been very fortunate that that's really never been the case for us. And I actually think it's because we were able to immerse our kids so much when they were little that their French was really pretty strong little, and that also we've been very fortunate to really keep an active contact with grandparents and friends and other relatives in France, and my kids have a lot of connections there, and they go there fairly often, like sometimes once a year and sometimes every other year, but they have an active relationship with their grandparents and other people in France. And so my theory from where my kids never kind of rejected it so far, and they're 12 and 15, so they could have gone through that cycle, is that I think that they really see French, and being French language is really part of who they are, and that for them at this point to reject it would be like rejecting like part of their whole being or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, and it's kind of funny that you mentioned the thing about the secret language. Whenever my son calls me from school, I know he's like talking to me in French, or he'll be like, you know, because he likes kind of getting known as like, oh, the French guy, or like they're proud of it, and they certainly aren't the kids that try to hide it and, you know, like kind of hide from people that they speak it. They're like, oh yes, you didn't know I speak French, and then, you know, and somebody at my younger son's school found out recently, and they were all like, well, say this, say that, do this, do that. But then one time he told me something funny, actually, though, the bilingual kid trick, because he was like, well, you know, like, you don't know every single word, right? Especially like we're saying at that age. And so he's like, you know, Mom, I realize if I know the word, I tell them. If I don't know the word, I just make it up. They don't know.
That's awesome.
So, but yeah, for my kids, I know that is the issue that people talk about, but I feel like And I'm not criticizing other people either at all, but I just feel like if somehow you're able to really make that connection with them, then they're less likely to do it because they feel really connected to it. So.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So, Jen, could you tell us, have you ever faced any resistance from, you know, friends, family members, or do you feel like other people think it's cool?
I think for the most part, yeah. I think for the most part, people do think it's cool. I do have some examples of instances where people asked questions or maybe didn't understand or, you know, things like that, just because it's just not something that they've been exposed to, you know, being with a bilingual family. But overall, it hasn't really been too much of an issue. I had had some family members comment that they were worried, like, that we might be talking about them behind their backs, which to me was a little bit, I was like, oh, my gosh, like, you know, obviously not.
It sounds like an issue with that person, not with you.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, anyway, but I tried to reassure them that obviously this would never be the case.
Yeah, right.
And that's not why I'm teaching my daughter to speak another language, to be able to talk about, you know, their family
right,
members.
Exactly.
But anyway, no, I mean, overall, totally not an issue. I think overall people do support it and think it's cool. And, you know, generally ask questions if they don't understand something or, you know, if they want to see, you know, what the reasoning for it is or, you know, things like that. So, no, overall, I think that's been great. But I'm definitely, like, looking up to people like Eve and hope that someday I can get there where my kids, you know, feel that as part of their identity and, you know, that they won't have that resistance. Because right now my oldest daughter's 3, so she's definitely not resisting. But mm-hmm. I wouldn't, you know, she's not quite speaking French either yet. So she mixes words. And like this morning, she kind of mixed the two languages. She said, I want to mettre mon pantalon. So she, you know, she kind of mixes.
I think that's pretty common, too.
It's really
yeah.
cute.
Yeah.
But,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, so we're still kind of, I think we're getting there, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh. Great.
Well,
yeah.
We actually, I knew a friend growing up that her family did that. And I think that's really, that kind of thing to me is really common. And it kind of makes it like, we feel like, oh, when someone is visiting at our house, then we have to make a conscious effort not to do that kind of stuff because we just pull the easiest word, you know, sometimes.
Right.
And I think that's pretty common in multilingual families. So
yeah.
I think it's cute. And I just think getting to the most
progress.
Efficient point of, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I see the fact that she's even using any French words as progress. So I'm happy she's mixing mm-hmm. languages at this point, to be honest, because I know that, you know, if I keep with it, in a few years, there won't be any mixing,
right.
you know, anymore, I'm sure. I think they say that by age 5, you know, by then things kind of definitely have their separate boxes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm not at all worried about, you know, languages being confused or mixed or anything like that. I see it as progress. So whenever she does that, I'm like, yes, okay, good. We're
right.
on the right track.
Well, for a 3-year-old, that's pretty impressive. I mean, to say, I want to mettre mon pantalon, like, that's pretty good for a 3-year-old. I think you're definitely on the right track.
Okay, well, good. Thank you.
I was thinking about, there's a funny story in my family. They all laughed at me because I was mixing. I said, like, what did I say? Regarde, il a something it was avec stick. It was something about half of it was in French and half of the sentence was
avec. I remember that.
The avec stick. My family thought that was hilarious. So I'm saying it's not just 3-year-olds to do it. People like, you know, adults do it too. And I think
right.
this is part of the process.
Right. Totally. Yep.
So next, sure. I wondered if you guys could talk about, I'm sure that you have faced some challenges as well, because raising your children this way, you know, in another language when you live in the U.S. is not the, c'est pas évident, right? It's not the
mm-hmm.
easiest thing to do, and how you overcame some of those challenges. So Eve, why don't you tell us about some of your challenges, and then we'll go to Jen.
Okay, yeah, I had at least 3 things I wanted to mention, so I'll try to not make that too long. But I was thinking that the stage we are right now, I would say that getting resources that appeal to teenagers is a challenge. So it was pretty easy when they were little, and I just think, you know, I mean, I love American or English, British, whatever, kids' books too, but French books for children are very, very lovely. They have, you know, just wonderful illustrations
and characters,
yes, just,
and yeah, really
yes,
cool stuff.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And we had tons of them, and there were tons of them to choose from. And so now I feel like it takes a little bit more effort, you know, to get books that are interesting to them and can keep their interest and having to have them spend a little more time and effort to read an entire novel to the end, for example, you know, even if it's a short novel. So both my kids I'm really happy about is that they do read pretty well in French, you know, but it is a little bit more effort than their dominant language, which obviously is English because they live in the U.S., and so it has to be really engaging. So that's one of the challenges. And one thing for us is that you know, we have support of people in France, and their grandmother, their French grandmother, is really good at picking out French books for them. And she's also very supportive when they go visit, that they are really, like, you know, try to encourage them to read and buy them nice things or whatever to read and stuff like that. So that's kind of how we've been getting over that now. But I feel like there's less interesting resources than when they were really little. So
yeah,
another thing I think is a challenge is that I do think, you know, within a certain, with whatever your parameters are, I think that it's a financial commitment to do this and that it costs money, you know, at least some money one way or the other. If you're getting resources, you have to make choices. Are you going to take trips? Are you going to buy books? Where are you going to get them from? Are you going to buy movies? Are you going to get talking toys or whatever? You know, some of the stuff you can do for free, but you do have to spend some money. And so that can be a challenge. Like, how much money can I actually afford to spend on this, or what am I going to spend on this? You know, that kind of thing. And then also the last thing is, like, we kind of alluded to it, is I think that it's a challenge for some of us who are perfectionists by nature to give up on you know, total perfection, that in reality I just have had to come to the you know, kind of realization that you can't live in two places at once. One language is going to be dominant. You know, it's hard to give up on that idea that there'll be this perfect ideal, which, you know, really doesn't exist. Even for a native speaker who lives somewhere else, like a native speaker like my husband, you know, you kind of would fluctuate back and forth, right? If you're not living in one country or the other. And I think that we have to realize that, you know, whatever we give them, and by the way, of getting towards bilingualism is something good, and it's starting from, you know, otherwise, like me as a kid, I was at zero, right, because my family wasn't bilingual.
Right.
So anything they get is more than, you know, someone who's at zero, right? And so some point, yeah, they have to decide on their own. You know, one language will always be somewhat stronger, but then they have to decide on their own as their own individual person, not just as your kid. Like, okay, yes, I really do invest in this. I'm also invested in this. I'm going to learn to write correctly, or I'm going to learn, keep my language up, or whatever. So we give them, you know, like you talk about just your kids in general, right? You give them all these things to move forward with their own life, you know? And so we give them what we can as the base. Whatever that is better than zero, however far they get.
Right.
And then it's up to them, you know, where they take it. And then, you know, we kind of have to let go of that. So
yeah, and I think that's a really good point, because one time when I was talking to I think another translator we know in Colorado, who was lamenting that her kids were sort of like passively bilingual, like they understand everything but they can't express much, that I said, you know, look, like, I never spoke a word of French until seventh grade, and I still managed to get a master's degree you know, in French and become a translator, you know. So like you said, Eve, I think, you know, there are going to be only advantages to it, and you can't kind of be too harsh on yourself of like, my kid's French isn't perfect, or, you know, their English is still always dominant, that whatever foundation you give them is an advantage.
Yeah, and they'll use it for, you know, they'll use it how it works best for them long term.
Yeah.
So,
Jen, how about you, of some challenges that you've faced?
Yeah, so for me, I think my biggest challenge is that I live in a very remote area, and there are no other French speakers or any type of French organization or school or anything like that. I'm literally the only person speaking in French to my children, and we actually don't have a lot of family left really in France. So I do plan on taking some trips once they're a little bit older, but, you know, we don't really have that many contacts to can really help. So the way I've been trying to overcome this is, you know, as much exposure as possible, buying lots of books. But as you've said, yeah, that can be costly. So I've been trying to buy them secondhand whenever possible, asking the family for magazine subscriptions, and just watching TV shows only in French if we watch shows, which is not that often to begin with. But if we do, they're French. French music, French radio. When they're in the car, I have them, they're held hostage. They're right there, so I have to put French songs on for them. So that's a good one, too. And basically, I did try a few times to also basically create whatever was missing in the community. So, for instance, we do have a Spanish story time at our library, so I'm going to try and piggyback on that and create a French story time. And then also my daycare, where my daughter goes to daycare, same thing. They ask us to volunteer once a month, so I've occasionally offered to bring a French book and just teach some colors in French to, awesome. You know, little 2 and 3 year olds. So, but basically the main thing that has helped me are some techniques that I did find online. And one of these is a technique that's called NERCH. So if you think of the word nurture, but it's spelled N-E-R-C-H. And the first letter stands, the first letter N stands for narration. So basically the idea is to talk through the things that you're doing with your child, and you can keep the five senses in mind. So the things that you're doing, seeing, hearing, or smelling, or feeling, or tasting, and just talk about it. Just basically narrate what you're doing. And this doesn't honestly come very naturally to me, but I know that it's great for exposure, so I do try to do it whenever I can. And then the second one, E, stands for expansion. So we're trying to expand on the words that, you know, the child is saying. This is obviously mainly for smaller kids, so it probably won't be good for teenagers, but these are things that I found helpful for me. And I think it's good for any language combination, really. But, yeah, so expansion is, you know, if my daughter says, oh, Vera eating, then I will repeat that in French and say, yeah, you know, in French I would say, yes, Vera is eating her food and she likes it, and, you know, just kind of talk about it a little more.
Expand upon what she, take what she
upon,
said. And,
exactly, yeah, and correct it, too, because she, you know, she may not have used a verb or whatever, so I would kind of correct it as well and just model the correct usage. And then the R in the NERCH acronym stands for recast, and the goal is to recast with the, well, that, this is actually what we were saying earlier about the corrected structure, so recasting is saying what the child said but in the corrected structure. If she says something in French with errors in it, or if she says it in English, I will repeat it into French and model the correct way of saying it. So it's kind of similar to the expansion. And then the final one is choices, which I really like doing because I think it empowers her to actually use the language. And one example for that would be to say, do you want a banana or an apple? Instead of using an open-ended question, like, what would you like to eat? You know, it forces them into answering, you know, one of the two things, and then they have to use, you know, the minority language. And I do this all the time. Even if I'm driving, I'll say, is that a blue house or a red house? And then she has to say, c'est une maison bleue, you know, she has to always repeat it. So I do this a lot because I think it helps increase her own confidence in expressing herself in French. And then I added my own little personal CH, which is not in, like, the document that I use, but my own little personal CH for the NERCH is to praise her and to show cheer.
And to show
excitement when she does say something in French. I don't go crazy, but, like, I, you know, I'm like, good. She be on.
Give a positive reinforcement. Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. So those are kind of the things that I find help me kind of, you know, strengthen my confidence and also all of this since I am on my own. So these are kind of the things that have helped me kind of come over some of the challenges that we have.
That's cool. And I mean, one thing I would add to that is, I think one really interesting tip I've heard people give for bilingual kids over the years, and I thought this was hilarious but true, is like the first time that your kid looked up at you when they were, you know, a year old or whatever and said, "Mama," you didn't say, "It's mother, you idiot."
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that you like tears welled up in your eyes, you know,
right,
at the, you know, intensity of the emotion. And you didn't say, like, "Get it straight, it's mother." And so, like, you were, Jen, you know, that I think to be, like, really positive and enthusiastic about the efforts that the child does make. Rather than saying, like, no, you use the wrong past participle for that verb.
Exactly. I mean, there are often times where I don't even correct because I'm like, it's okay. Like, she'll get it. And it's not, this isn't like, you know, the baccalaureate or, like, you know, this is, it's okay.
Right.
She's making mistakes. She's learning. We don't have to point out each and every mistake because that'll just make her feel bad anyway.
Yeah.
And I also think, well, especially at your age, but even at older ages, I think that's part of the reason too where we get all these other inputs, where we get the books, where we get the movies, where they hear stuff besides us. And like you said, just by virtue of hearing it over and over again, they will know what sounds right as opposed to us having to always say, that was wrong, which we're not going to do.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we don't just want ourselves to be a resource. We want all this other input that they're getting too. So.
Totally, yeah.
And one thing I do want to say, just to make sure everybody knows, we should have made this point earlier, is that even though we all have our second language is French, all of these techniques totally work, and it's nothing to do with French. They're all, you know,
language
neutral.
Right.
So,
yeah.
And yeah, and so, then the, I sent you guys the PDF, so maybe your listeners can access it.
Jen has a cool handout about the NERCH tips, and we'll put those in the show notes. So for anyone listening, you can go to speakingoftranslation.com and take a look at that. So to wrap up, I wondered if both of you would give us some of your favorite bilingual tips or resources that our listeners might want to check out, either for French stuff specifically or in general, like maybe places to buy books and movies or websites you found helpful or things like that. So Eve, why don't you go first?
Yeah, I have a couple categories. So the first category is like advice and communities that you can turn to for ideas and encouragement, kind of like just get more ideas as opposed to language-specific things, but some of them could be language-specific. So the first one is blogs. The most active one that I'm aware of right now is called bilingualmonkeys.com. And he has really has a wealth of information on there that, you know, even posts that aren't new, it's just kind of evergreen information that you can look at and get ideas for raising your kids bilingually. And that's the same thing. The man who writes it is Adam Beck, and he's raising his children bilingually, English, Japanese, but all of his things are language neutral. You know, you can use them too. And so then there's also bilingualkidsrock.com, and they also have a podcast. And then and those two, I think, are pretty active. So there was like in the golden age of blogs, I think there were a lot more blogs, and then I used to follow a lot of them, but then people over, you know, after a couple of years, and they kind of move on to something else. And so there are two really good ones, though, that aren't necessarily actively posting, but again, a lot of their information is evergreen, and they have a super comprehensive and really great tips is SpanglishBaby.com, and that's not just for Spanish speakers. Some of the things they talk about are for Spanish speakers, but there really are tips for all types of bilingual families. And then there's MultilingualLiving.com, and that one too, she has tons and tons of stuff. Even though she hasn't posted, you know, recently, it's still very a very helpful site. And then there's also babybilingual.blogspot.com, and we'll put all these on the show notes too. And this is really interesting because she posted for a long time and hasn't been super active lately, but she has a lot of great information. This woman just happens to be in Colorado, but she is a non-native speaker too, who brought her children up to be bilingual in French, and that's super interesting, especially for those out there who who aren't native speakers. So, and also on Facebook, I wanted to mention there's different, you can search like bilingual kids or bilingual children in the Facebook search bar, and you'll come up with a lot of different sites. And one of the sites that might pop up is one that Jen started and I now am administering too, and it's called French Speaking Parents in the U.S. And so there's a lot of people, and actually people from all over the world, that are raising their kids bilingually in French. But there are other Facebook pages on Facebook that are, like, for example, there's one for about, if you live in Madrid and you're raising your kids bilingually, there's one for you to join. Or there's other ones that are more international where there's, like, you know, lots of people, 30,000 people from all over the world sharing ideas or whatever. So Facebook can be a good resource. Then I wanted to mention a couple books. One of them is called Maximize Your Child's Bilingual Ability, and that is by the Adam Beck, who's the guy who runs Bilingual Monkeys, and it's a really comprehensive guide, and he has great ideas in there. And then some kind of more classics are a book called Bilingual by François Grosjean, and he's a known expert in bilingualism, but it's still readable. It's not too academic. And then there's also The Bilingual Edge by Kendall King, and there's also Be Bilingual, Practical Ideas for Multilingual Families by Annika Borgogna. And so that's that category. So then before I pass it on to Jen, I also wanted to just talk really quickly about when you're looking for resources in your specific language. So, you know, it could be Hungarian, it could be French, German, whatever the listener's language is. This is looking for resources rather than, you know, kind of communities or getting advice or whatever. I always favored what I'm calling authentic resources more than dual language resources. And so, like I mentioned, and Jen mentioned too, you know, we got a lot of books, we got a lot of movies, we got music, we got toys, like any kind of input that we could think of. And we would get that, you know, we'd either order it online or we would get it from France or whatever, get it on eBay or whatever you do. But I think that it's really important to have you know, that's a tip, is important to get authentic resources. So for, like, if your language is French, maybe you're French Canadian, and so you would get more resources from Canada than from France. But for our family, I got them from France. And I also think, you know, there's a lot of stuff online. Like, there's streaming, there's ebooks, and all that kind of stuff. So there's lots of resources available. And I just think a good tip is that it's really important when you can to use really authentic resources that have been created for native speakers, because kids are language sponges anyway. And the more input that you give them, the higher quality that their language output will be.
Awesome. Thanks. So Jen, how about you? What are some of your favorite resources?
So as far as like kind of language or bilingual communities, I was also going to mention Bilingual Monkeys. I think that's a great place. They have community boards where you can exchange and talk and ask questions and all that. So that I think is a definite must for anyone in this journey. A podcast that I like and listen to is called Bilingual Avenue. So wherever you get your podcasts, just look for that. Bilingual Avenue is a good one. And then as far as resources, like in the native language, as Eve is saying, you know, to make them authentic, there's so many resources out there, so many more than I would have thought personally. Like, for instance, YouTube, Netflix, we watch mm-hmm. French cartoons and TV shows, movies, whatever. Even shows for me, like adult shows, mm-hmm. to keep up with my French and to know what's going on in the French culture. I use YouTube to watch Envoyé Spécial or, you know, like like TV series, like comedy shows and such. Pandora and Spotify are great, not just for kids artists, but also to discover, you know, who's hot right now in the country, mm-hmm. you know, that you're following. Another great resource is honestly my local library. I use their advanced search feature on their website to look for French kids books or DVDs. And by now, my librarians, they all know me, and they know that I teach French to the girls, and they know that I'm always on the lookout for French books, and sometimes they, like, give me French books for free that they just don't need for their collection. So
that's awesome.
So it's kind of cool. It's kind of a community thing. Like, they don't speak French, but they know that I do, so they want to help me out, so that's kind of nice. Apps like iPad apps, educational apps, are sometimes bilingual. So you can look into the description of the app, and it'll say languages, and it'll say Spanish, French, whatever. So always worth looking into that. And then eBay. I use eBay a lot to buy, sell, you know, books or CDs. And then, as Eve mentioned, the Facebook group has been great for not only moral support, but also to buy and sell, you know, books from one another. Or CDs, so that's been really helpful. I can't talk enough about the moral support and just the inspiration that I got from other parents, you know, being in such a remote area, to have that, like, connection online was really invaluable to me. So that's kind of been helpful. And then finally, I think a tip that I got from Eve's book, which has many, many great tips, but one that I kind of do is I put my iPhone language settings into French as kind of a reminder for me throughout the day to speak French. Eve's book has this tip and many other great tips. It's jam-packed with resources and ideas on how to increase your exposure in the second language, and all of the ideas are, like, helpful for adults. Not necessarily even have to be a translator or an interpreter, but just, you know, if you want to increase your exposure. And many of the ideas work for parents, too, who are trying to teach their kids another language. So thanks for that book, Maintaining Your Second Language. And I think that's pretty much it for me.
Great. Yeah. Thanks. So just as a reminder to our listeners, correct, when Jen mentioned Eve's book, it's called Maintaining Your Second Language, and you can get it on Amazon or wherever you procure your fine books. And thanks for listening to this episode about raising bilingual children. Our special guest for today was Jennifer Bacall-Horn, who lives in Breckenridge, Colorado, and is raising her two daughters bilingually. And thanks for joining us. So
thank
you both.
Me.
Yeah, thanks for taking your what we know is your very limited free time with
a
1 and 3-year-old.
As a mom of
young
kids.
thanks
it was
for
my pleasure.
Serving right an hour of it for us. So just a reminder to our listeners that if you're listening to this episode on our website, you can also subscribe to our podcast in iTunes. And if you are listening on iTunes, you can find lots of resources and show notes on our website, speakingoftranslation.com. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you in a future episode.